Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, from beautiful Broadcast Park, perched high atop in the posh Studio A. You're listening to the Conservative Underground, and the mission of the show remains the same today as it did over 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago now, to promote the conservative political philosophy of limited government, personal responsibility, and individual liberty. I am a charter member of the Great Silent Majority, founder of the Bitter Clinger Wing of the Republican Party, and what we're attempting to do here is save the Republic one podcast at a time. So, thanks for joining us. The title of the broadcast today, Thanksgiving in the World in Which We Live, news and commentary from a conservative perspective. So, it's Thanksgiving tomorrow. This show's being broadcast live November 25th at 10 a.m. The call-in number is 347-637-3227. And generally speaking, we're just going to talk about the world in which we live today and how we can be thankful for the fact that we live here in the United States, that we're beneficiaries of a country and of a republic that has given so much to so many people. And unfortunately, we have to deal with challenges at home and abroad. And we'll talk about those in more detail as we get along. But it is a potpourri Wednesday here on the Conservative Underground. Thanksgiving in the world in which we live. We have a lot of other things we could talk about as well. The Reuters five-day rolling poll, Donald Trump now at 38%. Vladimir Putin is blitzing the Syrian rebels. You haven't heard already, the Turkish government shot down a plane, a Russian fighter jet, and the Syrian rebels then shot down the pilots who were parachuting out of the, were ejecting out of the downed plane. And I received texts throughout the day from friends, what is this, the start of World War III? Rush Limbaugh called it the shooting down of Archduke Ferdinand's plane. These are the kinds of things that prove why we need American leadership in the world. And you just can't say, screw it, because you don't want to deal with it. President Obama awards superstars Medal of Freedom. We'll talk about that. An NFL player shot in the head in Miami. Border agents warn threats will come in from Canada. Senator Sessions releases list of 15 revealed to be jihadis. Refugee crime spree. The president's plan hinges on top court deadline clash. Thousands of Cubans stuck after Nicaragua declines to open border. There's so much we can talk about. Plan for a Virginia mosque becomes target of post-Paris backlash. All this and more. Again, we're broadcasting live over on blogtalkradio.com, the Conservative Underground. We are on Periscope right now through our Twitter account, DocConservative, D-O-C. The call-in number, you can watch us on Periscope. You can talk to us on Blog Talk Radio. You can chat on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in number, if you want to opine on any of these topics, 347-637-3227. That's 347-637-3227. And you, or you could, of course, send us an email at conservativeunderground@outlook.com. conservativeunderground@outlook.com.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Welcome back to the Conservative Underground. Thanksgiving in the World in Which We Live, the title of the broadcast today. You know, back in 1789, President George Washington, the first president of the United States, for those of you in King County, Washington, proclaimed that Thursday, the 26th of November, 1789, is a day of public thanksgiving and prayer devoted to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be. That comes from George Washington. The Thanksgiving holiday that we continue to celebrate in November tomorrow was established by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War and made into law by Congress in 1941. Over at the Heritage Foundation, they write, "In setting aside a day for Thanksgiving, President Washington established a non-sectarian tone for these devotions and stressed political, moral, and intellectual blessings that make self-government possible. In addition to personal and national repentance, although the First Amendment prevents Congress from establishing a religion or prohibiting its free exercise, presidents as well as Congress have always recognized the American regard for sacred practices and beliefs. Thus, throughout American history, presidents have offered non-sectarian prayers for the victory of the military and in the wake of catastrophes. Transcending passionate quarrels over the proper role of religion in politics, the Thanksgiving Proclamation reminds us how natural their relationship has been. While church and state are separate, religion and politics, in their American refinement, prop each other up." I want to read to you the proclamation from President Washington at the request of Congress, delivered on October 3rd, 1789, designating November 26th of that year a day of Thanksgiving. And I want you to keep that last part in mind that I read to you. While church and state are separate, religion and politics in their American refinement prop each other up. And think about how throughout our history, as I identified from the Heritage Foundation, we have always relied upon non-sectarian tones, I guess, non-sectarian tone in devotions, in thanksgiving, in fasting, in times of difficulty. And that gets at, ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion, the foundation of this country. And it is uniquely American because we're really the only place on earth where it's worked and worked this well. This unique idea of the relationship between people and government and religion in our society and in our politics and its separation. This is a very delicate balancing act that this country has been able to pull off in an exceptional way for over 235, 40 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. And we're beginning to see the fruits of the labor of the radical left in this country, the progressives, who have decided that they aren't happy with that traditional foundation. They're not content. They're uncomfortable with those principles. And they've sought, in their own way, to change it fundamentally. And in its place, in God's place, and in our own self-reliance, they've cloaked their message of central government control with hope, change, fairness, and equality. This is the world in which that we live. But we still have a lot to be thankful for. We still have it within our grasp to get back to those fundamental principles, to defend them, and to not flag or fail and go wobbly when the pressures of a secular world, an evil world, and those seeking their own power and personal gain at the expense of others swoop in under the false hope and change, fairness, politically correct, equality crowd. So I offer to you President Washington's Thanksgiving Proclamation from 1789. The words of the first president, one of the great presidents that this republic has ever seen. And keep in mind, these are the folks, Washington, Franklin, Jefferson, Madison, who gave us this republic. We are the folks that are beneficiaries of this republic. And it is our responsibility to pass down this gift to the next generation. And it's our charge to keep this republic, to keep its principles, to keep its freedoms, in some sort of fashion that will benefit the next generation. So George Washington's Thanksgiving Proclamation here on the Conservative Underground. Thanks to those joining in on Periscope. And we're doing the show live on Blog Talk Radio. There's a chat room over there. Our Twitter account is Doc Conservative. By the President of the United States of America, a proclamation. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed and acknowledged with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto Him our sincere and humble thanks for His kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions of His providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for all the great and various favors which He has been pleased to confer upon us. And also, that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech Him to pardon our nation and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws. Discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best. Given under my hand at the city of New York, the third day of October in the year of our Lord, 1789, George Washington. So notice there in his declaration that he, the president, is giving thanks to the Almighty for us becoming a nation, for his, the Almighty's, protection, for everything then that followed, for the conclusion of the war, for the fact that we have a great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty enjoyed since that time. And the key word here, the key phrase to me that has always stood out, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness. And he then notes particularly the national one now lately instituted. Think about that. Giving thanks to the Almighty for all of us endeavoring in the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety. Giving thanks for our ability to be reasonable people. And how reasonable have we become as people? You take a look at the streets in Chicago, and I'm not talking about the protests, which are ridiculous, that are going on now over yet another death of an African-American youth at the hands of law enforcement. The protests are ridiculous. These deaths are ridiculous. It's a much greater problem than what's being purported in the media. But I'll tell you this, I'm talking about the discord in our streets, the shootings, the lack of a family structure, not only in our urban areas, but even in some of our rural poor areas. The way upon which politics are discussed in this country, the way people carry themselves. We are not being rational in our public discussions. And I think that that is one key component to preserving this republic and keeping it for the next generation. This idea that protests in Missouri, in Virginia, Chicago, for all whatever cause, these are not peaceable and rational protests. This is mob rule, mob intimidation. And then the life upon which that are being ended and harmed in the streets of our nation in so many ways. We, in a sense, as Americans, are losing our ability to be peaceable and rational amongst each other in dealing with our national interests. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion. 347-637-3227. All these topics and more, you give me your thoughts on all of this. We'll talk about more issues when we come back. You're listening to the Conservative Underground.
Eighty. 75.
Help us stop diabetes.
100.
Join the Tour to Cure.
60.
Register to ride.
36.
Or sponsor a rider.
50.
Call 1-888-DIABETES or visit us online at diabetes.org/tour. How many miles will you ride?
25.
If a fire breaks out in your home while you're asleep, how will you know? Smoke and heat build quickly, making every second count. A working smoke alarm can alert you to the danger and make the difference between life and death. Install and maintain a smoke alarm on every level of your home. Replace the battery every year. This message is brought to you by the United States Fire Administration, your local fire department, and this radio station.
Up next, more news headlines. A survey conducted for the American Institute of CPAs among 751 students who entered college this past autumn reveals that 37% expect to be living at their parents' homes when they graduate in order to cope with the repayment demands of their student loans. And 37% said they don't expect to find jobs within their field of study. AICPA said 59% of the surveyed students estimated it would take less than 10 years to pay off their loans, but 79% didn't know how much they will have borrowed by the time they graduate. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel updated a 2012 guidance that advises federal workers how to meet their Hatch Act obligations to keep political activity out of their workplace, particularly with regard to the use of social media. The Hatch Act forbids federal employees to engage in partisan activity on behalf of a political party or candidate. OSC's updated guidance, among other things, allows federal employees to display campaign logos or candidate photos as their profile pictures on their personal Facebook or Twitter accounts. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau launched an interactive online tool to help consumers calculate the optimum time to claim their Social Security retirement benefits. The CFPB web tool enables consumers to estimate how much they can expect to receive at different retirement ages and evaluate the trade-offs between retiring at the earliest possible age and delaying the decision for a few extra years. The Department of Housing and Urban Development initiated a rulemaking to prohibit smoking in public housing facilities. The rule would require more than 3,100 public housing agencies operating throughout the country to implement smoke-free policies within 18 months after a final HUD rule is implemented. A proposed rule unveiled by HUD Secretary Julian Castro would prohibit lit tobacco products, cigarettes, cigars, or pipes, and all living units, indoor common areas, administrative offices, and all outdoor areas within 25 feet of housing and offices. An estimated 3,000 Americans die from a foodborne illness each year. That's why it's important to always use separate cutting boards for raw meat and vegetables. To learn how to keep your family safe, please visit foodsafety.gov. This message has been brought to you by the USDA, HHS, in the Ad Council. Up next, the Conservative Underground. Welcome back to the Conservative Underground. Thanksgiving and the world in which we live is the discussion today. We'll move on to a few other topics, but the call-in line is 347-637-3227. interesting topics there discussed in our headline segments. We break twice an hour to just briefly toss out various news reports and headlines from around the internet, news sources that we in our news department here at the Broadcast Park have compiled. If you'd like to talk about any of those in detail, give us a call. If you'd like to talk about my Thanksgiving opening monologue, give us a call. What are you thankful for this year? All of those things, feel free to give us a call. And let's do this. Go over here. All right. You know, there's an interesting article over at the Daily Mail, a British newspaper. The title is Thugs Hurling Stones, Cars Set on Fire, and Refugee Children Aged 5 Escorted to School by Police. Inside the once tranquil Swedish village at war with migrants housed in emergency centers. This village in Sweden have seen tensions so bad that young migrant children are given police escorts to schools. Two warring communities have traded insults and are throwing rocks at each other, leaving many scared to even go outside. Snapshot of Sweden, where 17 migrant centers burned down in 2 months. As many as one in five now support the far-right Swedish Democrat Party. The refugee crisis now is spreading throughout Europe, and even it's come to this small, tranquil Swedish village has been torn apart by bitter tensions after the arrival of 20 refugee families. Residents and newcomers, and I can't pronounce the name of the village, Tarsanjo, I mean, I don't know how these words are pronounced in Swedish, but if you know German, there's umlauts over the A and the O. Tarnsjo, I guess is how you would say it. Tarnsjo, Transjo. But it's about 150 kilometers north of Stockholm. Residents and newcomers have exchanged insults, thrown rocks, and set fire to cars, leaving many on both sides scared to leave the safety of their own homes. And I wanted everyone to know here, we're not blaming the refugees for all of this. These are folks that are stuck in a hard spot. But it's how the governments of the world that are blinded by liberal, politically correct bullcrap have chosen to deal with this problem. You know, refugees are refugees. They go in camps. They go in camps within areas of their own country where it's safe. And if there's nowhere safe in their own country, then the neighboring countries around them take them in, put them in camps, clothe, house, feed. When the situation gets better, they go back. This idea of transporting these folks clear across the globe, in some cases the United States, but all throughout Europe, reminds me of the ill-conceived busing attempts to desegregate schools in the United States, where kids from inner-city neighborhoods would be bused for an hour a day one way to schools across town just so they're in the name of diversity and politically correct. And it proved to be a disaster. The kids were ostracized. They had difficulty adjusting, not to mention the transportation difficulties. This is the same sort of crap. And I understand they have the best intentions at play here. And we want to help these folks. But what's the best way to do it? Telling people and communities, here, you're stuck with it. Now it's your problem. Well, what the hell did they do? These folks can be helped if they are kept closer to their homeland. And not an attempt to redistribute wealth and perpetuate the welfare state. And on top of that, we don't know who some of these refugees are. Are there terrorists embedded? Are there other folks looking to cash in on criminal activity? These are legitimate questions, and I take offense to anyone who questions that, you know, folks asking these questions are somehow racist or bigoted or something. No, these are legitimate questions. Let's help the people we can help, but that doesn't mean we got to take them all in. And now we're seeing this spill over in the tranquil neutrality, liberal panacea of Sweden. Every time you turn around, liberals talk about how the Scandinavian countries have it all figured out with these high tax rates, welfare state. They've got it all figured out. That's national socialism. This is what we should aspire to attain. Well, now they're having problems. Young migrant children living in this Swedish building, Swedish village, have had abuse shouted at them, spat on their journey to schools. But these are no longer exceptional to this one small village in Sweden, which has always prided itself on welcoming refugees with open arms. In the last few months, I mean, there's a limit to what people can handle and process. In the last few months, with 10,000 asylum seekers arriving a week, the country has reintroduced border controls, and the anti-immigrant Swedish Democrats has become the second largest party in Sweden, according to opinion polls. Bubbling anger has spilled over into violence and arson. Protesters have set fire to 17 immigration centers in the past 2 months. And the authorities have warned it is only a matter of time before someone is killed in the race, hate, arson attacks engulfing this once peaceful nation. Problem in this village, far-right local councilor Michael Ullman told Mail Online, comes down to the fact many of the villagers never wanted the migrants to move in. Racial tensions have divided the village into two groups, those who support the immigrants and those who want them gone. There has been fighting between immigrants and the people living here. The village integration works badly because people don't want immigrants in the village. This is no longer a happy community. It's divided and is not a pleasant place to live. The counselor continued, "We have the highest tax rate in the country because we are paying for so many immigrants. Everyone who comes gets an allowance of 200 kroner, about 20 pounds, a week, and free housing. And who pays for it? Us taxpayers." Andreas Peterson, a migrant liaison officer, admits many were outraged when they began to arrive. He hoped people he knew in the area would help them to integrate and never anticipated one day police would be called to escort migrants' children to school as locals hurled abuse at them. Things have disintegrated to such an extent that children aged just 5 sometimes run the gauntlet of hate and intimidation and sometimes arrive too terrified and upset to speak at school. Even the teachers are too frightened to walk with them, worried that they too will become targets of hate. Children said they were frightened, that they did not feel safe when they were going from their home to school. So this is what's going on in Sweden. The problems are said to have begun in September when migrants started throwing stones at locals, cars, and residents retaliated by throwing them back. The fires were further stoked on social media, and eventually locals, thought to be teenagers, began organizing events where a gang would gather to throw stones at the block of flats, which has been turned into makeshift migrant center. This went on for about 2 weeks at a low scale, almost every day. It escalated, windows at the center were smashed. This scared the migrants. They had come from Syria, a war zone, to this. The following day, a car belonging to a refugee family was set afire. Teachers aren't the only ones in the village worried of rising tensions and what it might mean for their own safety. Neighbors living in an apartment nearby have caused all kinds of devilry, according to reports. Some had even shot an air gun at it. I've heard a lot of noise and disturbance. I don't like them. They have been throwing stones, and they scream a lot during the night. This is villagers about the migrants. And then with the attacks from racists upon that, it does not feel safe here, especially with my wife being pregnant. So this is a situation on the ground in a small village. There's the rest of the article over at the Daily Mail. But, you know, the takeaway here is the blind, ignorant policies of just the liberals thinking that they can just take all these folks in, put them in communities, and there'll be no strain. There'll be no friction. Because we're a nation, we're a world without borders. And the reality is, you know, you're going to have bad apples in the migrant community, the refugees. You're going to have bad apples in the communities that don't want to put up with all of this. And it's ridiculous that there would be property damage being perpetrated by the refugees and racial insults and retaliation by the villagers. But you've added fuel to the fire. And this is the world in which we live. That's from the Daily Mail. Your thoughts here on the conservative underground. Sweden may not be the most ideal place in the world after all. In this country, Senator Jeff Sessions over at Breitbart.com is out with a list of 12 vetted refugees who quickly joined jihad plots to attack the United States. Sessions is spotlighting the refugees turned jihadis because he's trying to prod Republican leaders into halting Congress's normal practice of giving the president huge leeway to import foreign migrants and refugees into the United States. Obama is promising to bring in an extra 10,000 low-skilled, difficult to integrate Syrian migrants in the United States. Sessions and other critics fear he'll use his many powers and Congress's autopilot funding for refugee programs to bring in far more than 10,000 migrants. In fact, from 2010 to 2015, Obama has allowed more than 200,000 low-skilled migrants from Central America to enter the United States and then disappear into the nation's growing population of at least 11 million illegal immigrants. Obama says the new refugees will be vetted, but top security officials say the Syrians can't be vetted because the U.S. doesn't know what they were doing in Syria before they applied for refugee status. Besides, many of the jihad attempts in the United States are launched by the children of Muslim refugees and migrants. That list includes the two Chechenian brothers who bombed the Boston Marathon, and Anwar al-Awlaki, who was killed by a U.S. missile airstrike when he fled to Yemen after the 9/11 atrocity. That means the Americans' federal government actively importing national security problems that will eventually cost billions of dollars to manage but cannot be eliminated. Congressional leaders will set funding levels and possible curbs during member appropriations debate. According to a Capitol Hill aide, this list, which only covers 2015 and not the many jihadis from prior years, illustrates just how incapable our government is of vetting refugees or predicting post-entry radicalization. Yet, the president wants to completely blank check in the appropriations bill to fund not only all of these existing refugee programs from across the globe, but to add a permanent Syrian resettlement program to it, funded directly from Americans' paychecks and retirement accounts. The new but incomplete list of refugees turned jihadis include, and I'm not going to read all of this. On January 29, 2015, in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, a federal warrant was unsealed for the arrest of Libyan Hajij Mohammed, a native of Somalia, whose sources indicate came to the United States as a refugee, adjusted to lawful permanent resident status, and subsequently applied for and received citizenship for allegedly providing material support to Harakat Shabab al-Mujahideen, also known al-Shabab and al-Qaeda. Mohammed is believed to have left the U.S. on July 5, 2012, with the intent to join al-Shabib in East Africa. Mohammed previously lived in the metro D.C. area and worked as a cab driver, and is believed to have snuck across the border to Mexico after being placed on the no-fly list. Carl Gates, special agents in charge of the FBI's Washington, D.C. field office, emphasized the importance of locating Mohammed because he has knowledge of the Washington, D.C. area's infrastructure, such as shopping areas, metro airports, and government buildings. This makes him an asset to his terrorist associates who might plot attacks on U.S. soil. So, you know, States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, on January 29, 2015, a federal warrant was unsealed for the arrest of this Liban Hajj Mohammed, a native of Somalia, whose sources indicate came to the United States as a refugee. Again, there's a list of 12 from Senator Sessions, 12 vetted refugees who quickly joined jihad plots to attack the United States. So this is over at Breitbart. I'm not going to read it all, but it does bring into question, as a Capitol Hill ed, just how incapable our government is of vetting refugees, predicting post-entry radicalization. So let's take another quickie break. You're listening to The Conservative Underground. We'll be right back.
My life was going downhill fast. Everybody was on my case. Now, I kept hoping that life would change real soon. I knew drinking too much messed up my life. A friend suggested I check out AA. It worked. I found myself in an AA group. Finally, I've got my act together. Alcoholics Anonymous. It works. Look us up. Check your phone book, newspaper, or AA.org.
You feel petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments, not knowing what to do. You do nothing. But if you do something, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about your options. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Up next, more news headlines. A study from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that adults without health insurance or who use Medicaid are twice as likely to smoke as adults who have private health insurance or Medicare. CDC said 28% of uninsured adults and 29% of Medicaid recipients are smokers. And in contrast, 13% of adults with private insurance and 12.5% of those on Medicare are smokers. The study also reported that the prevalence of smoking among U.S. adults declined from 21% in 2005 to 16.8% in 2014. Terrence McNeil of Akron, Ohio, was arrested and charged with encouraging the murder of U.S. military members by disseminating information about them using social media. The Department of Justice said McNeil reposted a file containing photos and information about military members whose names and addresses were originally collected by the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS. A 54-year-old female U.S. citizen was apprehended after fleeing from a U.S. Customs and Border Protection inspection station near Pine Valley, California, and leading police on a high-speed chase that ended when the woman crashed into the car of a vehicle that was waiting at a stoplight. CBP said the woman tried to escape on foot but was corralled by a California state trooper. A 39-year-old male, Mexican national, described as visibly shaken and bruised, was found locked in the trunk of the woman's vehicle. The U.S. Census Bureau has no plans to create a separate category for Filipino Americans, and the 2020 census will therefore continue counting them as Asians. According to 2010 census results, there are 3.5 million Filipino Americans who are U.S. citizens, and they comprise the second largest Asian group behind Chinese Americans. The Census Bureau decision was based on the Office of Management and Budget's definition of Asian as a person having origins in the Far East, Southeast Asia, or the India subcontinent. Help your children discover the magic of nature and create memories that will last a lifetime. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest or park near you, and discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, biking, or even camping. Visit discovertheforest.org. Up next, the Conservative Underground. Welcome back to the Conservative Underground. So the question, now becomes just who are we helping with these with this refugee stuff? Is the intent to help the Syrian refugees? Which I think that it is. But we also could be helping the terrorists. We could be helping the terrorists in this way. Their folks are coming into this country, and it couldn't even be organized. It could just be, questionable people coming in, and then the radicals who are already here taking advantage of fresh potential recruits primed for entry. These aren't doctors. These aren't highly skilled professionals. Highly skilled laborers, mathematicians, lawyers, journalists. These are low-skilled migrants. Could be ripe for radicalization. So who are we really helping here? The Syrian refugees? And that blanket term, which it brings up images of women and children, upon which, you really don't see a whole lot of women and children. When you look at newsreels, you see a lot of young men. Or, as a result of this attempt to help blindly, blinded by ideology, blinded by politically correct, blinded by people who know so much that isn't so, are we then really helping evildoers throughout the world, taking advantage of a situation? Again, and it's more than just terror group A mobilizing their people and putting them in these refugee camps and being processed in. It's people coming into the country who may be pissed off at whatever Western culture, get here, and then get radicalized within their own communities. And the key component here is not all Syrians are radical terrorists. Not all Middle Easterners are radical terrorists. But when you have policies that don't distinguish between the two and don't vet people and just then it's backed up by a desire to flood the zone, you can't possibly develop a system that works. So who are we really helping? That's my question. 347-637-3227. I don't know who we're really helping here, because the Syrians now in Sweden, and that's just one example. The Syrian refugee program in Sweden is causing turmoil in village after village. There's tension between the residents of the villages and the Syrian refugees. There's cultural shock everywhere, and there's bad actors on both sides. And taxpayers are being forced to pay for all of this. And in this country, we've got problems with people coming in as refugees in the past that have been radicalized, as the list that Senator Session revealed of 12 people. It could be more, probably is more. And our ability to handle this influx of people. And, of course, if you question any of this, you're against people, you're yada, yada. It's just the same old juvenile sort of thing. So that's my question. Who are we really helping? This is the world in which we live. And I get back to Washington's Thanksgiving proclamation, our ability to rationally and peacefully deal with our problems, not just in this country, but in the world. And this is not a rational way to deal with problems, just to take the drapes down, open the drapes, open the doors, and allow whoever to come in, and we'll just take care of them once they get here and manage it. Never mind that there could be bad actors looming. And we know there's bad actors out there. Look at Paris. Look at New York City. Look at any country or any city in the Middle East and in Iraq. In Afghanistan, that has been subject to these terrorists. It was an NFL player shot in the head in Miami. A player for the St. Louis Rams, who grew up in South Florida, was shot Tuesday in a drive-by in front of a Miami Gardens home, according to the Miami Herald. Wide receiver Stedman Bailey was shot in the head as he was sitting in a car with other people, according to reports. The shooting, which also injured relative Antoine Reeves, happened at about 8:45 p.m., Miami Gardens police reported. Police are looking for a light-colored four-door car, possibly a Buick Regal. Miami Gardens police spokeswoman Dorothea Hall, said Bailey and Reeves, along with three additional passengers, which included two minors, were sitting in their car when another vehicle arrived and opened fire. The victims drove themselves to an area hospital for evaluation and treatment. The St. Louis Rams issued a statement Wednesday morning. "We are all aware Stedman Bailey was involved in an incident this evening. We have spoken with Stedman, and he is in the hospital in critical but stable condition. We are gathering facts about the situation and will provide updates as we learn them." Stedman Bailey grew up in South Florida and was back in the area while serving a four-game substance abuse suspension. He played for the Miramar High football team in 2007 and 2008. Bailey was shot overnight outside a house in Miami Gardens while he was sitting in a car on Northwest 199th Street and 38th Place. He was in the car with his two young children and a cousin. Bailey was set for surgery Wednesday morning at Aventura Hospital. His injuries are said to be non-life-threatening. Bailey was a third-round pick in 2013 out of West Virginia. Has started three games each of the last two seasons, and this year has 12 receptions, 182 yards with one touchdown. Anyone with information is urged to contact the Miami Gardens Police Detective L. Gonzalez. You can see the numbers to call from the Miami Herald story. The takeaway, critical but stable condition. Stedman Bailey grew up in South Florida and played for Miramar High. Police are looking for a car from which someone opened fire. St. Louis Rams player shot in Miami Gardens. I'm not alleging Stedman Bailey did anything wrong. I don't know what, but, you know, it just is a pattern of these kinds of things happening to NFL players. I don't know what it is. It's not all NFL players, and I'm not making a crisis out of all this. But, you know, here again is another story. It's not just NFL players, it's athletes who find themselves in these kinds of positions. What else is going on out there? Is this simply coming from a troubled area? The kinds of people that you're associating with, I don't know, but it's just yet another story. Reuters issued their five-day rolling poll of Republican presidential candidates, and here are the results. What does that mean? For those of you in King County, that means Reuters has a poll that they do every 5 days, and it rolls over. So they call people every day, and then they just take the average of the last 5 days. And then 5 days later, they'll do another. They'll continue to make calls. Donald Trump sits at 38%. Texas Senator Ted Cruz is second. This is a national poll. At 11%, 11.6. Ben Carson at 11.5, so statistically a tie. Marco Rubio is fourth at 8.2. Wouldn't vote for anybody is at 7.4. And former Florida Governor Jeb Bush rounds out the top five at 5.7. And then there's a significant drop of 2 or 3 percentage points. Mike Huckabee, John Kasich, Jim Gilmore, all at 3%, along with former Senate candidate and business executive Carly Fiorina is now at that 3% level. Rand Paul, Chris Christie, all at 2%, and then the nobodies, Rick Santorum, George Pataki, all down there as well. Donald Trump, the takeaway there is Donald Trump continues to lead the field, and he's lapping the field. And when these poll numbers turn into votes in primaries, then that's when the Republican establishment, the manure, will hit the ventilation. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Conservative Underground.
With prostate cancer affecting a staggering 1 in 6 men, Kimberly Clark Corporation and its Depend brand have partnered with Zero, the project to end prostate cancer, to launch a national awareness campaign to help bring an end to this disease.
As a prostate cancer survivor myself, I can tell you that the keys to stopping this disease are education and early detection. That's why I'm proud to team up with Depend and Zero. Guys, it's simple. If you're 40 or over, talk to your doctor about prostate health or your risk for prostate cancer. Thankfully, I did, and it saved my life.
In 2006, prostate cancer struck three-time baseball all-star Ken Griffey Sr.
When I was diagnosed, finding out early gave me a number of options. So, men, I urge you to do what Lynn and I did. Talk to your doctor. Prostate cancer is not only treatable, it's beatable. We're both living proof.
When prostate cancer is detected early, men have a 99% survival rate.
Up next, more news headlines. The Federal Election Commission remained hoisted on its petard of unbridled partisanship after refusing to initiate a rulemaking to close a loophole which federal contractors used to skirt a law that bars them from contributing to federal candidates. Public Citizen lobbyist Craig Holman said the FEC created the loophole when it decided the ban didn't apply to subsidiaries of federal contracting companies. Coincidentally, Common Cause delivered a 1 million signature petition to the White House that asked President Obama to sign an executive order to require federal contractors to disclose their political spending. Tobacco maker Swedish Match North America gained U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval to market snus, a smokeless tobacco product that is popular in Scandinavia. It was the first new tobacco product approved for marketing in the U.S. under a 2009 law that authorizes the FDA to regulate the manufacturing, marketing, and distribution of tobacco products. The FDA said its approval is not an endorsement, noting that all tobacco products are potentially harmful and addictive. A request by the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund to intervene in a U.S. Supreme Court-bound legal test of President Obama's order to delay deportation of migrants who entered the country illegally was granted by the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Last week, the appeals court held that a district judge properly blocked Obama's order from taking effect until a legal challenge brought by Texas and 25 other states is decided. The Department of Justice said it will appeal the Fifth Circuit decision to the High Court, a move that was applauded by the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights and Human Rights. The California Department of Conservation said it will conduct free oil and mineral surveys on the private property of anyone who requests it, just like it did for Governor Jerry Brown, Consumer Watchdog said. CW said oil and gas supervisor Steve Bolin, who handled the governor's request, has received hundreds of requests after the Associated Press reported that a complaint was filed by a whistleblower who said she was retaliated against after complaining that it was improper to do personal work for the governor. Join parents and experts at understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues to help you help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything. Brought to you by Understood.org and the Ad Council. Up next, the Conservative Underground. Welcome back to the Conservative Underground. We're just talking about Thanksgiving and the world in which we live. You know, I hope that everybody has safe travels this Thanksgiving, tomorrow, tonight. We're doing the show here Wednesday, November 25th, 10 a.m. early broadcast, special time. And let me just say a note aside, the website, conservativeunderground.info, it's still a work in progress. I do the best I can to keep it updated, but it's where you can find articles, the Twitter account, where the podcast is housed, where the link to the live broadcast is on Blog Talk Radio, where you can listen to the archives of the live show that we do here. All sorts of information about the show and conservative stuff. If you would like make a submission to the website and for conservative commentary, if you want to create your own sort of blog heading, we can do that as well, free of charge. Promote your show, your website. We can post that stuff there. It's just an avenue to connect people and to social network. Shoot me an email at conservativeunderground@outlook.com, and we'll work something out. It's a lot for one person who's pretty busy to keep it up. Do the best I can. But we do this live show here various times throughout the week at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and then various weekend days, Saturday or Sunday, at 2 p.m., the matinee broadcast. Today happened to be a day off for me. I'm getting ready to do some traveling and thought, well, I'll do a quick hour or so podcast and get some things that are on my mind out there for people to talk about. And so that's what we're doing here. But as this podcast comes to a close, this live broadcast, and we all begin to make our travels wherever we're going, whether it's across town or across the state, or if you're flying, be careful. Pay attention to your surroundings. Drive carefully. If you're tired, pull over. There are so many, if someone else can drive, let them drive. You know, there are so many demands on all of us during this holiday time. It can become stressful. It can become frustrating. You're trying to get to everywhere you need to get and make everyone you need to, that you're around, happy that you're there. And sometimes that can be stressful, especially if you're, you know, you've got kids involved or there's long travel time. You know, just take a step back. In some cases, literally pump the brakes and just remember why you're doing all this. Remember that it's a time to be thankful. Remember it's a time to take inventory of what you have in your life and the positive things that you have in your life and be thankful. Be thankful that, you know, you're in whatever situation you're in, if it's a good one, to be thankful. And if you don't find yourself in a good situation, maybe you're not able to travel, know that there are people out there that are praying for you. Know that you can go to a multitude of places within your community and be around people. You don't have to be shut in. You don't have to be ostracized. If you're not feeling well, you can get help. And there are people who are willing to help. And that's what makes the United States a great country. That's what makes our world a great place, is that people are very charitable. People are very giving. Even if you're not a religious person, there are people out there who are just very charitable and very giving, and there are people to help. But know that there are always people willing to help that are thinking of you, that are praying for you. But for everyone in general, it's a time to just take inventory. How can we make our lives better? What do we have? Being thankful for what we have and doing our best to help others. And safe travels to everybody out there on the roads traveling the next few days. You know, I just added it up for me, and it's going to be about 15 travel hours in the next 4 or 5 days. 15 travel hours in the car. And got to be careful. We want everyone to come back here on Monday. Diets have been busted. Your belt line has been expanded. Your waistline is belly buster. Hit the gym, but most importantly, come back and begin the craziness of the holiday season. Time to get a Christmas tree. Time to, you know, go up to the attic and pull out those decorations and all of the other stuff that you have to do for Christmas time and the end of the year. But don't lose sight of the kind of the spirit of the season as well for greater purposes and causes. Additionally, you know, there has been a friend of mine that, you know, I've been doing this podcast almost 7 years now, actually, April 2009. And during that time, I've met a lot of cool people. And I haven't been as involved in the last 2 or 3 years as I would have liked to have been doing this, as I was for the first 3 or 4 years of the podcast, where it was pretty regular, multiple times a week. But in the last, well, really the last year and a half, but really the last 2 years or so, you know, I've, you know, gotten married and have other responsibilities. Work, been very fortunate to be promoted at work, and that requires a lot of additional hours and inconsistent hours. But I've still try to do this, and I still haven't forgotten about a lot of the friends that I met early on. And I hope to continue to meet people as we still do this show, which is why, you know, Twitter, .conservative, the email, you know, we can, I look forward to forging relationships moving forward to better the conversation, to widen the perspective of the show, to get people engaged and talking and involved in our republic. Because we have to fight to keep it. And this is a conservative approach, but we welcome our liberal friends as well. But I do want to take time here to just remember the people and be thankful for the friendships that I've made on this broadcast over the years. I mean, 7 years coming up in April of 2016. And one is Holger, H-O-L-G-E-R, who I believe still does a show on Blog Talk Radio. I think it's down to maybe once a month or once every other week. It's called Holger Awakens. He used to have a blog, but I know that if you Google on Blog Talk Radio, you can hear some of his broadcasts. A great guy, thankful for his friendship. We don't talk as much anymore, but I still keep tabs on the show as best I can. It's usually a weekend, late night show that I just have a lot of difficulty getting to because of my new schedule. Another one over the years that I was able to meet and talk with at various times is Diane Student, who was involved in political podcasts for a long time and is in the Central Florida region, and did a show on Blog Talk Radio called Freedom's Wings. And I believe the archives are still up, and if you pick the right show, you'll probably hear me on there. And it was a great show, a good conservative friend who we had a lot in common with, who decided to move into a different direction a little over a year ago, 2 years ago, to do more non-political stuff and to concentrate more on writing. And I just want to let everyone know I've stayed in touch via the internet and some of the podcasts that she's done. And not everything has to be politics. I try to mix in sports a little bit with this, current events. But you can also, there's a lot of niches out there. And there's a lot of cool things that can provide an opportunity to escape from the trappings of the world. It's important to talk. It's important to be engaged. But it's also important to find other interests as well. And I think she found hers. And the website is historygoesbump.com, historygoesbump.com. There's a podcast that she launched in October of last year. I've listened to a few episodes myself, and it's an outgrowth of her blog. Every show features a moment in oddity, history of the day, and then interviews and discussions about a historic location, event, or person, and the hauntings associated with the subject of the particular show. The tagline for the show is Ghost Tours for the Theater of the Mind. And that is the goal of the podcast, to take listeners on a virtual tour of a place they may never have the chance to visit and to entertain while possibly sharing something listeners may not have heard before. They also have added the Haunted True Crime bonus cast and the HGB bonus cast. The Haunted True Crime bonus cast is about 5 to 10 minutes in length, featuring a true crime and the hauntings associated with that crime. The bonus cast is different than the regular podcast because it contains bonus material such as outtakes, bloopers, extended interviews, and real-life ghost experiences as told by listeners. So anyhow, historygoesbump.com, hosted by Diane Student and others on her website there. You can read about their cast of characters, and there's also availability to support the show. Again, it's a nice little niche. I can tell that she really likes doing it, and this is a good friend of mine that I've met over the internet and in person a couple of times over the years, and I'm not sure if this will ever get out to Holger or Diane, but to them, I want to take time to remember them as friends over the internet and as people that I'm thankful that I've gotten to know and interact with over the years. Again, History Goes Bump, Holger Awakens, still out there, still doing what it is that they do. Well, that's about all the time that I am going to devote to this podcast, and thank you all for listening in. Again, Conservative Underground, tell a friend to tell a friend. We're just trying to save the Republic one podcast at a time here, and trying to do it in a fun way and sometimes, but also very serious at the same time. We can get going on a lot of different topics. You know, one thing, I do want to mention this. I was watching the news last night, and I want everyone to take a moment and pray for that family in Indiana. And I apologize, I cannot remember the name of the family in Indiana that suffered a tragic loss. The wife and maybe one of the kids, definitely the wife, was shot, raped, left for dead by two African-American teenagers, thugs, who were just looking to cause crime, took her credit card, tried using her credit card, tried withdrawing money, a whole host of horrible things, not to mention the murder and the rape. And this wife, this woman, was the wife of a pastor, a man of God. And you can only imagine the kind of trauma that he's going through during this time. So please pray for them. And, you know, compare that to what's going on in Chicago, where a teen, an African-American teen, who had a knife, was shot and killed by police officers. Now, all the left-wingers, the Black Lives Matter morons, you know, they're out there protesting that, and it's an unfortunate incident. But if lives matter, where's the concentration on this other? And I really believe that it's all racial for some of these folks. They don't want to talk about the crime, the black crime on society, regardless if it's black on white, black on black, whatever. But the focus, for some political reason, for some racial reason, is now on a white cop killing a black kid and all of the perceived evils that is reflected on our society. And I say there's also evil on this youth culture in these crimes, black on white, white on white, whatever on whatever. And it's unfortunate that these groups are only around talking about one side and a distorted side of the story. The young man that died in Chicago, that's a tragedy. The fact that law enforcement's yet again involved in this, it's a tragedy. This shouldn't be happening. The fact that a lady died in Indiana, was murdered, raped, assaulted, that shouldn't be happening in the country as well. And this does have very little to do with race, even though race is a part of the discussion. But the bigger focus should be, the real issue, is what kind of society, what kind of culture are we creating in this country? What kind of morals do we have? Where is our moral authority in this country, drawing distinctions between what people should be doing with their lives and what they shouldn't be doing with their lives? In the interaction with government, in the interaction with others, there needs to be a moral awakening in this country, I believe, to people to wake up, take control of their communities, and marginalize this criminal element And it, in many cases, it's cultural. In many cases, it's media-driven. Whatever it is, this isn't about a white cop and a black kid. This isn't about two black people and a white lady and the crimes that are being committed. This is about our society and our culture and how we're raising our children. And the key thing here is respect. And when I see people protesting in the streets of Chicago and no one talking about what happened in Indiana, that's not the media story. That's upsetting to me. And it really shows to me our misplaced priorities as a society. It's a tragedy. This family in Chicago lost a child. It's a tragedy. I don't want to marginalize that, but what's going on? How does this continue to happen? And I think at the end of the day, you're going to find that the points that the protesters, the Black Lives Matter crowd, what they think is the problem isn't. They're politically motivated. They're all about race. They're all about revenge. They're all about, you know, trying to get theirs, when really this is a cultural thing. So I didn't mean to go on that long about this. Probably I've said too much, but it's what's on my mind. And it's said with the intent behind it to try to get people to come together, to talk about these things. Folks can help where they can help. Some folks have to take ownership. We've got this crazy world in which we live. And yet, through it all, we're to give thanks. And sometimes it can be confusing. Sometimes it can be frustrating. But we mustn't lose the sight. Mustn't lose focus. This is the greatest country in the world. We've got a lot to be thankful for. So with that, we'll talk to you next time on the Conservative Underground. Keep on keeping on. Thanks for listening, and have safe travels. Good day, everybody.